arrival was almost unspeakable.
We are all evil in some form or another.
I'm not guilty.
The dead won't bother you. It's the living you gotta worry about.
If I couldn't keep them there with me whole, at least I felt that I could keep their skeletons.
Hello! Welcome to the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. I'm Janelle.
I'm Vicky.
And we have a surprise.
Hi, it's me. So yeah, we have a very special episode for you guys today. With us in live in the studio is the one and only Jacob Mayfield.
Hi.
Soft golf clap.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you are, it's funny because I was trying to describe you to actually Wani, who's downstairs. Yeah. But
I have the description if you need it.
Yeah. And I'm like, he's a magician medium.
Yeah.
Which is the very basic.
More of an extra large post-pandemic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like psychic entertainer.
It's fair, yeah.
Mind reader, psychic entertainer. Mm-hmm.
Fair. Wow. Yeah. So
fantastic human. We could say that.
Oh,
yes. Resume.
Fantastic human. Yeah. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Yeah.
Why you're here?
Why are you here?
How did you wander in?
Get out.
Yeah.
So my name is Jacob Mayfield, and I'm a mind reader, a mentalist, and a psychic entertainer. So I pretty much, there's two big things that I do. I do a mind reading show, which is like a magic show. Have you guys ever seen my show?
I have.
She did.
Yes,
I have. I had to dip out earlier because I'm pretty sure I had to go home and write for another episode that we
I will allow it this time.
Yeah.
And then I also do tarot and palmistry.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
so
cool. That's a lot of fun.
Love what I do. Mm-hmm. Have fun doing it.
Yes.
I also love what you do.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, I'm really excited to have you on. Mm-hmm. It's awesome to have a different perspective that isn't us.
Yeah.
I love us. I love you. Like,
yeah, great.
I'm pretty sure it's old hat. You
know? Yeah. Pretty sure people are tired of listening to us talk. Mm-hmm. So we are absolutely excited to have you on the show today. I had a special request, by the way.
Oh.
So if you are a returning listener, special hello to you.
Flipped it and reversed it.
I got yelled at, like, why do only new listeners get a special hello? And I was like, that's a great question.
You gotta keep the demographic the base. Yes. Also appreciate
it. We love you so much.
Yes. Yeah.
This one's for you.
So before we get into our very exciting episode today, let's head over to the newsroom. So I want to talk about sharks and cocaine.
What?
Didn't see that coming this morning, did you?
Tell me it's not news related. Just talk about it.
Is it like the cocaine hippos? Do you remember?
Oh, isn't that
Pablo Escobar?
Yeah. Pablo Escobar. Yes. Not that.
You know,
well,
just gotta give your animals cocaine.
I mean, maybe. We'll say tangentially related.
Okay.
So I'm sure most of you know that there is a very large drug trade coming from South and Central America into the U.S. through Florida.
Mm-hmm. We're nodding, and then I was like,
as
wait,
we
make sense.
Yes.
No, I do it all the time, and I'm just like,
mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Oh,
yes.
Into the mic.
Agrees noises.
Yeah, this is an audio medium. Yes. So there's this huge drug trade that comes into Florida. And what they're finding is there's a lot of times if they run into trouble, get chased by cops or whatever, they're dumping large amounts of drugs into the ocean.
Oh.
Global warming and pollution.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. This is a great article from Sky News. So just last month, which would be, let's see, we're recording this. What month is it? July. June. U.S. Coast Guard seized more than 14,000 pounds of cocaine in the Caribbean Sea and Atlantic Ocean, just for some scale. But marine biologists have actually been looking into this because they're noticing some really troubling trends with sharks that end up eating these like bricks of cocaine that are dumped into the water.
So there's been reports about sharks getting closer and closer to the shore. Is it because they're on cocaine?
Could be.
And they're looking for a dealer.
Yeah, it could be. And they've talked about witnessing some species like great hammerheads that normally avoid humans that are coming directly at them.
Yeah.
Now,
that is the perfect shark head shape to do cocaine.
That's a hammerhead.
It's a lie.
Also, like, the sea is not for humans anymore.
No.
Between the whales and now the sharks.
Rest the ocean and don't go in it.
No.
Ever.
For real.
Respect from a distance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they decided to test their theory out and put some packages that were filled with.
They were chumming with cocaine.
So they call it.
The CIA needs
this.
A lot of cocaine for our shark experiment. Wink.
Operation.
So, first they
blow
were just.
Hole. Wink.
Oh God. So first they were just dropping bales that were not harmful. They didn't really have anything in them just to
just
see
like
the reaction.
That.
And the sharks were going right for these bales instead of like these like dummy swans and stuff that they put in the ocean, right? So then they decided to try out with a bait ball made of highly concentrated fish powder, which triggers a dopamine reaction, a dopamine rush that is similar to a hit of cocaine, but still ethical.
Okay.
You know, like ethic.
They've thought of everything.
Yeah. And
can you imagine the person in the lab testing this?
I know.
Like, okay, hold on. Cocaine? Fish dopamine. Yeah.
Same.
But also, like, going to Thanksgiving as that scientist. So what are you working on? Well, we're working on shark cocaine.
Alternatives.
Like, alternatives.
It's not great cocktail conversation.
No.
You know?
That's true. That's very true. And again, from the article, when the sharks ate the powder, the researchers saw them going wild. So they,
like with glow sticks.
Yeah.
Yes. Magic comes out of their gills.
Yeah. So they then moved to dropping bales similar to this from an airplane to sort of directly simulate people just dropping them into the ocean if they were like being tracked or getting in trouble or whatever. And they basically are just saying that these sharks are going for all these bales of cocaine. So, like, it's kind of troubling.
We've Pavloved the shit out of them.
Literally. Literally. Yeah.
I've never been so engaged by a news story in years.
And like, it's not polarizing.
I'm just like, what?
Everyone can come together over the cocaine shark.
Yeah,
it's a non-bipartisan issue.
Yeah,
literally.
Cocaine sharks.
Literally.
Uh-huh. Who's going to run on that platform? Right?
The Green Party, I hope.
Right, yeah.
The White Party.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like spawned this new research avenue where people, researchers are like, what are pharmaceuticals going to do to ocean fish and ocean mammals? Like,
well, how about the rivers and the lakes that we're used to? What about those?
No.
Those have tons of
those
pharmaceuticals.
Those are too far gone. We're already past that.
The Ohio.
Yeah. So it has kind of created this like whole other industry of like
research.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, I mean, lesson learned. Don't dump your cocaine into the ocean, please.
Yeah. Okay. No.
Hot take.
Maybe, maybe that's why the orcas are going after all the billionaires because they stopped dumping their cocaine.
That's like, probably roids, though. They probably are getting the roids.
Oh, yeah.
Rage.
I could see that. I could see that.
I'm really into the orca news. And like, I shouldn't be because like, it's violence. But like, every time I hear someone, like some tech bro. If you're a tech bro on a yacht being attacked by a whale and you're like, isn't this hilarious? Until the point like it's capsized. I'm like,
I'm not mad about it.
I'm not mad.
I don't promote, but also not mad.
Exactly. That's my take on it.
Yes.
Exactly.
I promote the anarchists of the sea.
Yes. Yeah, right.
When are squids going to get in on this?
I mean, there's already a legend.
Giant squids.
Right?
With all the tentacles, they're up to something.
Yeah.
I know it.
And they're super
smart.
Oh my
God. Yeah, fuck them. They also have the largest eyes of any ocean creature, so we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah. This is a marine podcast.
You just switched demographics hard.
Okay, you know what? Let's switch it up.
Okay,
we're gonna move on to Netflix and Kill, which this week is Max and Kill with probably the weirdest fucking documentary I've ever watched.
I also hate how they
changed
it to Max. I'm just getting like,
I know.
My hot take for today.
I'm trying to recondition my brain to be like, Max instead of HBO Max, but whatever. So this week we are talking about The Curious Case of Natalia Grace.
Oh my God.
Have either of you watched this?
Yes.
I only saw the preview.
Okay. So you kind of have an inkling.
Yeah.
Whatever you think it is, it's not. It is totally bonkers. Mm-hmm. It's fucking bonkers.
What?
It's fucking bonkers.
Everyone is messed up.
Yes. Everyone. Yeah. And I remember seeing this come in, and I think it's a holdover from Discovery Plus. So it was probably like a Discovery Plus original. It centers around this young woman, we'll say for at the moment.
Age questioned,
yeah. Where Natalia Grace gets adopted by a family, the Barnetts. They are under the impression that she is an orphan from the Ukraine, mm-hmm. and she is also a little person. Mm-hmm. She has a specific form of dwarfism that is very uncommon. Yeah,
huh. mm-hmm.
super uncommon, very degenerative, comes with a lot of its own issues, right? Well, then they're like, we don't think she's a kid.
We've all been there.
They are bathing her and find pubic hair. And they're
we're going to put allegedly
find pubic hair. She at the time was like 6, I think, when she was adopted. So mm-hmm. like, they're like, okay, we don't, you know, also people very clearly ignorant of things that come along with any of these dwarfism conditions.
Yes.
Like, there's some of that. Mm-hmm. Then Christine, the mother, starts claiming she was having a period and that she's actually older. She mm-hmm. looks older and she's acting older and she must be older. And then they have her re-aged up in the courts to like 22 and they drop her off in an apartment and they're like, please get out of our life. Meanwhile, in the midst of all this, there is allegedly all of this family confrontation going on where she's threatening to kill the family and she is like doing all it, like trying to attack the mother and like urinating. They're talking about her urinating in the car to like get yeah. back at one of their other sons. And like, it's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. So this is yeah. all happening. They drop her off in an apartment. They're like, you're on your own. Yeah. And then they start getting accused of it's a combination of child abandonment and neglect of a disabled adult. Mm-hmm. Because
the age is questioned.
What? The age is a question, this whole thing, mm-hmm. right? So then they start going to courts. Well, actually, we're finding out maybe she is actually a child based on DNA and medical evidence.
Oh, and they find her mother in the Ukraine.
They find her mother.
How?
To confirm, they Christine, the adoptive mother, is, we're finding out, incredibly fucking abusive. Oh, and probably the father, probably. I will say he has been acquitted
okay.
of his charges. Mm-hmm. He's fucking weird.
They're all but like, so
the whole thing is so weird.
Describe the flavor of weird. Because we're currently doing a podcast about crime yes. with a mind reader. So yes. I'm like, what do we consider weird?
He's just very, like, so the vibe I get, I honestly... To me,
he's a cocaine shark.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Now, yeah. Imagine a
he
shark
always
on
has
cocaine.
Wide eyes.
Yeah,
his he eyes reminds are like, me a lot of these people that we went to high school with that were sort of drama people. That okay. everything was a show. Everything yes. was very overdramatic. Okay. There's these scenes where he's like standing there talking with a baseball bat oh, and yeah. is like,
why?
And he breaks down into crying and he's just like, you know, yeah. like,
and sometimes there's
face,
tears. And I'm just like, what? Sometimes there's not. There's a scene where he acts out some of the abuse that he witnessed and he's like literally punching the fucking ground mm-hmm. and doing all of these theatrics.
I also get this he's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
He's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
And this is like I think his child is too, like they're interviewing them and it feels a little exploitative.
They start in the beginning, yeah. Their oldest son has Asperger's okay. and is incredibly smart. Okay. Like working on his master's at like 16 and doing
get
all this
it.
Crazy. Yeah, 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 yeah. And I do wonder if there is, because some of that is hereditary.
Yes.
Like there mm-hmm. is like just yeah. genetically hereditary.
But they
like,
1000% exploited that because
oh, yeah.
then the mother wrote
oh, yeah.
a book about him.
Oh
and,
yeah.
Like,
wait, the mother wrote a book?
About the you know, very intelligent son. Mm-hmm. Oh, but like didn't mention that fact, you know, that he was on the spectrum because then when they're interviewing stuff, he's having a hard time like talking to them and making
yeah.
eye contact. And
yeah.
it was just like really sad.
Oh my God.
Oh my
and also probably my favorite part of this whole fucking thing is they have a Jinx moment. Did you watch the Jinx about Robert Durst?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay. So they have a fucking Jinx moment where
Mics are still on.
Mics are still on. And oops, we were talking about some shit that we probably should have been talking about. And then there's this big explosive accusation at the end that never gets answered. You never find out what it is. And it just ends.
If you
it's
have
crazy.
A document, if you have a television crew, don't say shenanigans stuff till they leave.
Right.
No, like, no, like that's right. The key.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
they're,
the key.
They're like on a break away, obviously out of the eyes of the camera. And yeah. He and his son are talking and his son's like, okay, so we agreed that we're not going to talk about the kicking down the stairs thing.
No, we talk about that and at the IHOP 2 days before the camera crew shows
yeah.
up.
And all then right. afterwards, none he's like, oh, it. Fuck, my mic is still on. Yeah.
How do you not know a microphone's on you?
Also, saying that is only furtheringly incriminating, right? Because right? mm-hmm. you right. could be like, but we were joking because we're sillies. Right. But if you're like, oh no, my mic's on, it's yeah. like, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does not help the situation.
Not that the dad cares. He's just like, well, just tell me you don't want to talk about it. It's all very strange. Yeah. It's all very strange. The documentary answers zero questions.
Yeah, no. It raises a thousand more questions.
And a lot of this is ongoing, too. Mm-hmm. Like, the father's court case resolved in, like, 2020 or 2021.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, wow. Like, yeah.
And I think Christine still has yet to go to trial.
Right.
Michael Burnett is the okay. name of the father. So, this is still ongoing. I, frankly, wanted an episode at the end of, like, the camera crew interviewing them and being like, these people were the weirdest to work with.
Oh, my God.
Because I get the vibe that he directed some of his own scenes. Why don't you guys sit here and I'll come over and I'll do this 100%. Thing with the bat and then he throws the bat. The bat scene was like, what the fuck? It's just...
It was batty. It was real batty.
You elicited something deep in me. I want documentary crews now to have, like, you know how they'll do an episode of, like, The Real Housewives, like, a year later?
Yes.
I don't want that. I want a documentary crews where it's the crew talking about, like, the family.
Oh, yeah.
I would pay...
Just like one at the end.
Like Netflix, I'd pay extra for it.
A mm-hmm. behind the scenes oh, of yeah. how it was to work with. Because some of these things get really fucking weird.
Oh, I want the person who runs like the Kraft food table to be like, they spat in the melons every day.
Yeah.
No idea why, but they mm-hmm. did. Like, I want
this. Because
you know there's yeah. like, right? Because if you can sense that just with a little bit of a peek, you know there's like, bonkaroos stuff going on like
oh,
it's
yeah.
yeah crazy
especially yeah. with some like there are some reality shows where you're like how like Vanderpump Rules for example like
girl let's get a quick update on the streaming services because I just found out that I got Peacock Plus for basically until 2025
Ooh.
And started watching Vanderpump Rules from episode one last night.
Wait,
see,
what
I watched
season
the first two seasons, yes. jumped to the last season, and then I went back.
Who the fuck goes by Stassi? What the fuck is that?
Some yeah. real... I love watching shows like that where it's like... Because how long has that been on now?
Since like the early 2010s.
Yeah. Right, so like...
Like
so it's
gross.
Fun because like you kind of know what's going to happen in the world as you watch. Mm-hmm. You're like, we'll see about
yes, yeah. yes. This is the same feeling I had watching yes. Sister Wives. Mm-hmm. I've been yes. on a Sister Wives kick recently.
Ooh. Are you even watching like Downton Abbey? I'm like, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, right.
we'll see.
Oh,
you
my
know
God.
That the stock market's going to yeah. crash, you idiot.
Will the World War One come to England?
yeah, right.
Yes.
I know. It's true. So anyway,
yes,
I would highly recommend, it's, I can't even do it justice on this
yeah.
show because it's like so twisting and winding, mm-hmm.
But
it's called
definitely the most bizarre.
It's
I've
super bizarre.
Watched,
yeah. It's, you know what, after watching, how to, create a sex scandal, mm-hmm. they are like hitting these documentaries where like, oh, you think it's one thing. Oh, just kidding. It's a totally different thing. Oh, wait, actually, there's this other thing. They're like killing it.
Oh,
on
it's
that.
What I'm here for. I want a documentary yes. that's no sense of like traditional build or story plot.
Yes.
My,
yeah.
Like the Bigfoot one that was on Hulu where it's, did you not see this one?
Maybe.
So, oh.
Was it the weed one?
Yes.
Okay.
So yeah, yeah, yeah. It starts with like, we're on the hunt for Bigfoot and then it's like, wait a minute, this might be a drug trafficking thing.
Yes, and I have seen that.
Oh, it's delightful.
Oh, man.
So yeah, good.
It's kind of weird. And that was a little weird, too, because it is like this sort of...
And it's like a hard turn.
Yes.
Like, you're watching the first three episodes, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then it's like, it's drugs.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
Because they're talking about Bigfoot coming in and, like, stealing marijuana plants and killing people.
You're like,
and
that makes... This is good.
This is, like, California mountain lore, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because now we have sharks on cocaine, orcas
questionably
cocaine also
bear.
On drug.
Cocaine bear. Weed,
right?
Bigfoot. He's the only one who's relaxed about the whole thing.
Unless, you know, you can get weed psychosis. So...
We're gonna have to go to Bigfoot in the studio for that, Bigfoot.
So if you wanted to check that out, it's called The Curious Case of Natalia Grace. It's on Max. I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. This is that part of the show where we say content may not be appropriate for all listeners, but I gotta be honest, I don't even know because Vicky, we didn't also prepare this.
Yeah, also I don't know because we're gonna do a flip it and reverse it really hard today.
Yes.
We're getting told stories at it's the same great time.
I'm trying to think any content warnings. I guess if you are sensitive to matters of the mystical, content warning.
I mean, there's is there like child murder? No, is there rape?
There is like somebody does get shot in the head.
Okay. So murder.
Regular murder.
There's murder.
That's fine.
And there's fake ectoplasm.
Ooh.
So I'm going to say a warning on both of those.
Okay.
So when I originally was, I sent you like this huge list of like, I have all these things I'm an expert on. And then you pick something where I'm like, wait, I'm not an expert on.
Oh, no.
But like, have you ever done that?
Okay, can I just say, that is classic Janelle.
Oh, but like,
to choose the one thing that's like, okay, I'm maybe not so strong on that.
But like, it's funny because I'm like, I'm good at, I'm so smart. Not like, just like writing with my Lisa Frank notebook. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know like anything about that.
That's like me putting Excel on my resume.
You're like, I don't Excel at it, but like.
No, I know how to type numbers into
how
a field.
How hard are numbers in boxes, right?
Yeah. I'll Google it. So what... The original idea was, let's talk about two cases that were solved by psychic detectives. And after I agreed to that, I was like, I'm not going to do that. Because I got very, like, distracted and confused. Yeah. And then I sent, like, this very shameful email to Janelle. I'm like, dearest Janelle, there's been research questionable. So this is what we're doing today. We're going to talk about one case where there's a criminal case caused by psychic mediumship.
Okay.
Which leads to the like the repelling of a law and wartime scandal. And then we're going to do like an in-depth look at a psychic detective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's just get to it.
I'm really excited. You know what? It's interesting. Before you get started,
I'm already tapping my papers. Yes. I'm listening.
Yeah. It's interesting. This is something that we run into a lot when we're talking about cases. Mm-hmm. And actually when we're going to record later today, kind of ran into the same thing where you're like, I have this really great idea, but just like the bulk of research is not there. Like you do need kind of.
I had such a blast researching it too, which like was also like a delightful nerdy moment. Cause I'm like,
this is why we do it seriously.
Yeah.
Totally. Cause then I'm like, oh my. And like, I'm doing like many hours beyond the research need where I'm like, oh yeah, this is fascinating. Okay.
You end up in a rabbit hole.
So this is part of an 18 parts series.
Oh, thank God. I don't have to work for sharks. The next 3 months. Yeah.
All right. So the first person we're going to talk about is Helen Duncan. So Helen Duncan is known as the final woman to be imprisoned under the British Witchcraft Act.
Okay.
All right. So she was born Victoria Helen McCrae Duncan on November 25th, 1897. And she was often referred to as the last person to be imprisoned, not just like charged, but like put in jail for the British Witchcraft Act of 1735.
Jesus.
Super relevant.
So, I'm going to ask a question out the gate. So 1735, when do you think they repealed it? If you had to guess.
Okay. We're talking about England.
Yeah.
This is the Brits.
Jolly old.
1735. Interestingly enough, they actually are on top of their shit way before the U.S. ever is all the time. Mm-hmm. So I would say, I'm going to say somewhere in the
1900s. Yeah, I'm going to say 1925 or something.
Yeah, I would say like 1926,
Price is Right style. Yeah,
I was thinking more like 1918, actually a little earlier.
The answer is, lock in your vote at home now. Surprise. 1951.
But we did at least get the right center.
But like, there are people listening where it was illegal to do witchcraft in England during lifetime.
That's true. I mean, witchcraft is a real problem these days.
Apparently. But I just thought that was like nuts. And it actually does come into like, we're not already going to get into a tangent. I'm in my first paragraph of notes here. But like, it does come up a lot in the 20th century with like, you couldn't like publish like things on like magic
I
with a K.
Alistair Crowley. He's the one who did it dirty.
Yeah.
He's like, they're having orgies. We can't allow this witchcraft.
Like, not today, Satan. Yeah.
That's really interesting. That is one of those things that you wouldn't think would leech into such close modern times. Right. Like in the history of the world, 1950s is not that
no,
long ago.
Because Queen Elizabeth, she became monarch like mid-50s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. She was the last reigning monarch that country had, was almost monarch during this.
Jeez,
she ran on a platform. Well,
it was controversial, but she did it.
Yeah,
she's like, I was born. Helen was, speaking of born, she was born in Colander, Scotland, and she apparently had psychic abilities starting during childhood. She apparently could accurately predict local events, had visions, and as an adult, she married Henry Duncan and had 6 children, because 5 was not enough.
Yeah, unlucky.
And eventually her husband ended up kind of managing her career as a medium. Okay. So I never asked either of you this. Have either of you been to a seance?
Yes.
Janelle!
I'm more of a believer in these things than he
is. I'm definitely the skeptic.
You can still attend though.
Like, I have like not, altars not, and stuff in my home. Okay. So.
Yeah, I've not been to like a legit seance, but there's also part of me that's like...
We tried. I wouldn't say that it was effective, but we tried.
Oh, yeah. We did do a ghost hunt thing. Uh-huh. That was...
We've done some, like, stuff together. I've also done some stuff.
I'm trying to... I feel like seances are one of those things that always... I'm a little leery about.
Yeah.
Because
I'd
I'm
also
like,
be leery.
If this is real, like, I don't want to invite this into my life. I don't need that. I got enough regular life stress.
Salt circle, Vicky. Salt circle. Yeah.
Well, and sometimes, especially when people are communicating with family members, I'm like, so what's your question?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just checking in. Just like, yeah. Could I just send like a GIF text to them?
Yeah.
Like, what's the seance equivalent of that?
I just want to ask my grandma, did she really think my mom was a bitch?
Like, she acted like it. But Nana. So, anyway, so one of the most controversial aspects of Duncan's mediumship was that she wasn't very good at it. So the first thing happened, 1928, they do this huge investigation of her, and I'm just double checking my notes for anyone following along at home. Mm-hmm. So the photographer Harvey Metcalf goes in and she's like, yeah, take pictures during it. It'll be great. The pictures are not great. Like, you're going to want to Google these. If you're driving...
Don't.
If you're in a safe place, just Google Helen Duncan.
Oh my God,
Henry.
Yes,
same. I want you to Google that right now. I'm gonna keep going.
Interactive.
But they don't look great. And then in 1931, the London Spiritualist Alliance did an investigation, found out her ectoplasm, which is like the gunk you regurgitate. Mm-hmm. They're like, it's cheesecloth.
Yeah.
Then Harry Price does an investigation in 31 and is also like, she's super fake. And Harry Price as a psychic investigator.
Oh, heavens. Oh,
right. I need reaction scouts.
Okay.
What are we saying?
Here's the thing. It's like, that was
this looks like BDSM.
Yes. Literally.
I'm just saying, like,
literally.
Whoa.
This was a super common practice to use the cheesecloth as ectoplasm at the time. And there are, I remember back in the day when I was a little less skeptical than I am now, that seeing those pictures and being like, oh, this is crazy. Like, this shit is, because it looked more, I don't want to say realistic, but it looked more believable. It was more like ethereal and a little more.
And in the context of a seance room, like, cheesecloth would be very effective.
Yes.
Like, it sounds, I was talking about it, looking at a photo, like, it sounds really dumb.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, in a really darkened space when everything's hiding.
Yeah.
With the right setting, like, that can be terrifying.
Yeah.
But I know, did you see the picture with, like, the puppet?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Why, honey, why? Also, the outfit is leaving me.
It's just, I feel like there were people doing the same thing that made it look way more believable than this. Because this is just like, I shoved a dish towel in my mouth.
Exactly. Yes. And like, Harry Houdini, like, we talked about him going, trying to find a real one so he could communicate with his wife and like...
Mother.
Or sorry, and they were 1,000 times like more convincing, right?
Yeah.
Because you're trying to trick Harry Houdini.
Right, Yeah, no, this is not convincing.
Yeah, so I'm going to say at present we're unsure of her legitimacy. So, you know, she in 1928, she's shown to be a fraud. 31, shown to be a fraud. But then the big thing happens in 1941. So 10 years after, everyone was like, I'm not so sure, Ellen. So she's doing a seance, and it caught the attention of authorities because it was during World War II. And what happened is the ghost of a sailor, like a sailor spirit, allegedly disclosed that his ship, the HMS Barham, had sunk. And the sinking was real, but the news was not public yet.
Okay.
And it was kept a secret because there was one to keep morale high among, like, the citizens. So the news was not made public, but the seance was, and it was seen as, like, proof of her abilities because she had predicted this thing that she couldn't possibly have known.
Yo.
So I'm going in for hot takes, Vicky.
Yo,
what do you think?
Come on. I mean, that's probably... So how did she find out?
Exactly.
How did she find out? Because I feel even with this stuff, especially back in the day when it was like, well, we got to keep this secret. It wasn't hard to find somebody who would tell you secrets for some money or something. Blabbing. Like,
yeah. Everyone's blabbing down by the docks.
Yeah. And
dock talk.
And I just feel like it's an easy way to like convince.
Oh, yeah.
People. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Hot take, Janelle.
I mean,
pay a guy down by the dock. He'll give you info for a blowjob. Like, let's be real.
Sailors have big mouths, so I don't necessarily if that is, you know.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to say questioning.
So obviously questioning, but there was a really big concern about this because there was a concern that she was revealing wartime secrets.
So
the government was like, we need to lock this down. Right now. So how are they going to do that? They're like, well what are we going to imprison her for? Like, like, how could we can't take her to trial for saying things that are true, but you could take her to trial because there was still that 1735 Witchcraft Act.
Oh my god,
in 1944 they arrest her under the Witchcraft Act, and because they were fearful she would reveal more secrets, and the trial is a total circus. It's a total spectacle. The Duncan defense team brings up witnesses who attest to her authenticity as a spirit medium, and they go through all this stuff, and despite her efforts they end up having her serve 9 months in prison under the British Witchcraft
Act. They should have just shown those photos and they'd be like, yeah,
look how real this is. Check out that cheesecloth. I mean,
Well, and because that ended up being a big part of the case was there were all these people who were like, well, she's obviously fraudulent. But then the defense team was like, well, no, she's super realsies. But also it wasn't a fraudulent act. It was a British Witchcraft Act. Mm-hmm. So there was also... Can you try someone if they're not actually doing the crime?
Yeah. Is like mediumship really witchcraft also? Yeah. Like there's that question.
Right. Yeah. Like what could go under the umbrella of witchcraft? Like could astrology be witchcraft? Yeah. Could a microwave be witchcraft? Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Right.
And cheesecloth artistry.
Right. That's the thing is when the laws were enacted, like witchcraft was... pretty much anything that was like anti-Christian, essentially.
Having a mole.
Like,
or anything a woman did.
Yeah, to be honest.
It's like, anti-Christian like female, not into it.
Very broad laws for witchcraft. Because even if you were like, I don't, you know, there are so many things. Hysteria lands in that sort of, you know.
Right.
Same camp.
So she goes to prison, but it did lead to the repeal of the Witchcraft Act in 51, but they replaced it with, drum roll please, Fraudulent Mediums Act of 1951.
Okay.
And yes, what were you gonna say?
I think that's interesting.
So
keep going.
Enacted in 51. When do you think this law was repealed?
When did John Edwards start? Then, late 90s?
Yeah,
because in theory, then anyone doing mediumship on like British on like the BBC, it would be illegal.
Yeah,
in theory. So hot takes. What are you thinking? I'm gonna put you in the hot seat. What are you thinking?
92.
Yeah, 92. I think it's possible. It's still in effect.
You're both plot twist. Wrong.
Yeah,
but we love
2008.
Okay.
What?
Okay. Right. So what's okay, I have so many questions.
Right.
So what Is it similar to the witchcraft law in just like how broad it is as far as what's considered mediumship and what?
I think what makes this law tricky, because Houdini tried to do this in the United States, having a, like an anti-fraudulent mediums act, is how can you prove you're not doing something?
Yeah.
So when you get into that negating Terry, it's almost like an academic.
Couldn't
where it's
he
like,
then also be charged with that? Because he was kind of doing some
right, so
borderline
gets,
questionable things.
So it gets tricky because it's like in like academics, if you have a research project that's based on something not happening, that's way harder than like this happened. So how do you even begin that? And the way it was repealed to it, I don't have this in my notes. Google it, folks. But it was something like when they joined like the EU, there was something within like joining with other laws where it just had to be cut out. So I don't think it was being actively enforced at the time.
Yeah, because the rest of the EU was pretty mystical. They were like, get with it, England.
Because I'm also not, this might be a hot
frigid
take.
Frigid Brits.
I am also not entirely opposed to something like this. Mainly, but it would have to be like, very like way narrowed down in scope.
Yes.
Yeah, because I would say think, just general fraud.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like there's a lot of I think people who claim to be like mediums that are fraudulent and taking advantage of people, and it's super damaging, not only like monetarily, financially, but like mentally.
Oh, very much so.
You know, and that's the fucked up part.
You're a like, non-professional getting in the way of someone's grieving process if you're fraudulent. Yeah. Like that's terrible. Yeah. And I even think about like so like I do tarot and palmistry, and I was thinking of like the story front psychic. It says $5 palm reading.
Right.
You go in, you have the $5 reading, but then you find out that you're cursed and it's going to cost $200 in candles.
Yeah.
But I think you're right, Janelle. It kind of goes with like general fraud and also not making it so broad that it's almost like, is like what's even happening where it becomes like hard to define.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or sometimes you'll also see where it's because part like so spiritualism, like the religion, involves mediumship. So to have an anti-medium law would impose on someone's like freedom of religion.
Right. And I don't want to do that. I'm just saying I'm also not
about the cheesecloth ectoplasm.
Right.
So we gotta find that.
Yeah,
that's
is there a happy medium?
Do we make a joke?
God, oh boy.
Shirts not available for that.
So, yeah.
Gross mindset. So after her release, Duncan continued to do seances.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, I gotta give her credit. 28, proven to be a fraud.
You gotta get that bread.
31, fraud. Goes to jail. She's like, let's just keep doing this.
Yeah.
So she passes away December 6, 1956. And she has this lasting impact on spiritualism and also the legal landscape concerning mediumship and psychic abilities in Britain. And her big claim to fame now is that she still considers Scotland's last witch.
Wow.
So hot takes on Helen Duncan, guys.
That's pretty
what do you
cool.
think?
I mean, she's definitely a fraud.
She was a tryhard.
Definitely a tryhard. So was the law repealed after she got out of prison or while she was in prison?
No, it was after she got out of prison. I think there was, because it was still mid-World War II.
Yeah.
So I think they were just like, busy. We'll take care of that.
Yeah.
Put that like lower on the list.
We have more important things to worry about.
Nazi stuff. That's top priority. This, like number 12 on the list.
Yeah.
I think it was repealed later because people saw it as like an infringement of like belief. Because like there are people who practice witchcraft as a religion, and you can't do that legally in Britain if there's an anti-witchcraft act.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Is she a fraud? I'm going to say probably.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't know her. I wasn't there. So I can't like speak with 100% certainty.
I mean, if you live in Scotland, it can be easy to believe of mystical things, right?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's ethereal. You'd be like,
it's true.
But it's in me.
But like super weird. And also like such a weird thing to stumble on because it's really a psychic, not a psychic detective, someone solving a case, but someone causing a case.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was like interesting.
Yeah. And honestly, I think maybe at that time they'd be more like in the public purview. But like, I also don't think those are laws that people necessarily think about all the time because the
100%,
people practicing witchcraft is not, I mean, it is a large community, but like when you're talking in comparison to say Christianity at the time was like a 1% of people. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
a monarchy.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is Church of England.
Right, which is like a symptom of like a Church of England.
Yeah,
and like divine.
Yeah.
So it's it's weird. And I think you're right, too, especially with some of these like older laws. Mm-hmm. Like I'll hear just kind of like in my normal like Google News updates where it's like, yeah, small town in New York repeals anti-psychic voodoo law, where right, it's something written that's like all over the place and people are going through books and they're like, this is ridiculous, we need to like,
yeah, and it hasn't been enforced in a while or brought up right, in a while or whatever.
Like we haven't really talked about this in 80 yeah, years, so
yeah, so I can see that just like, yeah, being one of those things that just hung around,
yeah,
until it came up.
Well, the thing too is like, what politician is going to come in and be like, listen, hot take, we need to repeal this right now. Like, I don't think it's a priority for a lot of people. I can think of like
five people currently that would be like, we need to get rid of these witchcraft laws. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, or harder witchcraft laws, frankly.
Yeah, you that know, might be the way things are Satan, going.
No more Satan. Satan worshiping. Yeah.
So that's Helen Duncan. Historical, super interesting, but I wanted to find someone a little more less easy to, well, let's just get into it. She's okay, fascinating. Her name is Noreen Rainier. So she's a renowned psychic detective, and she's made herself a name for herself by not only collaborating with lots of different law enforcement agencies, but also working with the FBI in a way, okay, that she's like been publicly recognized. So she's known for her involvement in over 400 cases. And she just has this unique insight to help unravel mysteries. So she also apparently predicted her own heart attack. And
I mean, that might be that hard.
That one you're going to have to like, sell me on a little harder.
And it I guess the question is like, what was the distance between
also,
them?
Is she eating like 5 cheeseburgers a day? Because I could predict a heart attack too.
Yeah, like, you know, like her doctor history, may have been predicting that from the 80s.
Right, right.
But what's interesting is her cases... we're going to get into some quotes and like two cases specifically. There's a lot of evidence that we have to really kind of untangle. So my first question for both of you is like, what do you think a psychic detective does?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I think of like a
collects a check.
Yeah. So like it's like a USA show, yeah, where it's like, oh, he's fumbling and bumbling into all these cases. Might as well be one. Yeah. Psychic detective. There, well, I just made a show.
Yeah. Right. And well, and that was the hardest part with researching was, mm-hmm, there's a lot of media on psychic detectives, yeah, but it's so through a lens of the want for it to be successful and amazing far outweighs the want for skepticism. So it was hard to find people that I thought were worthy of like profiling,
yeah,
where I felt like we had good like stuff.
Yeah. I feel like as far as when you're talking about psychic detectives or, yeah, people that help law enforcement,
yeah,
in that capacity, I do feel like there's a tendency for them to reach out to law enforcement, yeah, more, yes, than
we're gonna talk about the that law enforcement.
Okay. But yes. I think that is adds a different color, yeah, to it a
and
little
I'm
bit
sure,
but
yes, like I remember seeing things in the 90s like television news where, yes, it was, yes, saying, you know, very similar things to that where it's like this woman in this field is like, I know something happened,
right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And I also pretty sure they tried that on the Stephen Avery case at, yes, some point.
Oh, they do it in, yeah, pretty much any major case.
There's... that's when you know things are really going to shit is they're just like, all right, bring in the psychic.
Well, and I also think from a news standpoint some media cycles go with it because they're like, yeah, we want to keep covering, mm-hmm, but nothing's happened on this case in months.
Yeah.
And I think that there's also an incentive. So because of that, it gets hard to just find like facts,
yes,
more or less.
Yeah.
So here are some quotes about Noreen that I just think are really interesting.
Okay.
Which is, first one is, remarkably, the lost man's body was found exactly where Rainier said it would be. People scoffed at us for seeking out a psychic's help, but Noreen's input was quite incredible, even a bit spooky. Detective Sergeant John Burkles of Oxford, Ohio Police Department. Next quote, she helped us locate a plane containing the body of a relative of an FBI agent, retired FBI Specialist Agent Robert Ressler. And without Noreen Rainier, we would not have located Norman Lewis. I'm extremely impressed with her abilities. She told us things that she would have had to have been an eyewitness to have known, and that's Olin Slaughter, unfortunate last name, mm-hmm, Chief of Police, Williston Police Department.
She did all the murders.
She did all.
Mass serial killer.
All. All 400 cases she solved. Yeah. She did all of that.
Busy. But what I think is interesting is like, to have so many law enforcement individuals,
yeah,
make public statements.
In Ohio?
Well, and because I don't see Ohio as like the most friendly place to be like, I really believe in the psychic lady.
No, no.
So it's
Ohio.
Interesting.
Yeah.
As far as how, yeah, psychic detectives work, obviously, like, there's different forms of abilities that people can claim and use, but what Noreen uses is psychometry. And psychometry is the idea that an object has, like, a special meaning or energy.
Okay.
And the best way...
A horcrux, if you would.
If you would.
For all of our Harry Potter listeners on that.
I don't... Listen, I do not want to offend all of our psychic listeners by saying your shit's a horcrux.
No.
But...
We're just saying. Yeah. For people who aren't familiar. Familiar,
if you need something to latch on to. Yeah. But I think that if you're skeptical, kind of the best way to think about psychometry is the reason someone would go to a museum or want to touch an object. So if I go to see the Mona Lisa, I'm going to fly to France. I'm going to stand behind 6 feet of tourists. Mm-hmm. It's behind two sheets of like glass. There's all this space. There's two guards. Why not just like order a poster? Mm-hmm. Why would anyone feel compelled to see it in that setting from such a distance behind all this glass? Like,
because it's the thing.
Exactly.
It's the real thing.
Or like, mm-hmm, if you've ever been to like a jewelry store, like if you go to like somewhere like a Tiffany's and like, do you want to try some stuff on?
Wait, hold
like,
on. You know who you're talking to right now, right? Tiffany, you're like, what a stretch.
I know a Tiffany.
I know a Tiffany.
I've been around Tiffany lamps, just not jewelry.
I've seen one. Yeah, I've seen one from a distance.
But like, when people are like, I want to try it on.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's going to be cold and heavy.
Yeah.
Just like my heart.
like me hot. But so like, why do people want to touch it? And that's like the idea of it. So I think even though it can feel really like out there for some people, a lot of people have that like need to like, well, I want to go see the Mona Lisa. Like, I want to be in the room.
Yeah.
But it, like, why?
Yeah. That's a really good analogy because I think I get that feeling.
Yeah.
Like,
right?
I totally get that. Like,
and it's totally illogical.
Yeah. And it's even, honestly, as simple as like ordering stuff online. Sometimes you're like, I'd rather go to a store, look at it, pick it up, hold it. You know, like.
But and there's no reason either. No, or even with things like when you're ordering groceries, like with produce, it's like, I'm sure it'll do a fine job. But it's like, well, I want to touch it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it kind of goes to that feeling. So we were talking about 90s television earlier. There are so many. She has been in so many forms of media. She's been on like every channel, every show you can think of between the 80s and 90s. But there was one show that she did such an exceptional job on. I kind of used it as like the core for my research. Because that way, if you're listening and you're like, I want to know more, you can go and like YouTube it. Okay. And it is season 7, episode 17 of Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, fuck yeah!
Unsolved Mysteries!
So, why? It's fascinating. First of all, she is in her reenactments.
Which is what we love.
Yes.
So we talk about all
which
the time.
I will say.
Classic Unsolved Mysteries move.
I do find very suspicious whenever someone's like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll pretend I'm getting murdered again.
Yeah, like, how is it not re-traumatizing for the actual, like, crimey parts?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But you also get to see her, like, do her thing, like, work. So in this episode, it's about the case of Jake and Dora Cole. So on May 15th, 1986, Dora's on the phone with her daughter, and her daughter hears her scream her husband's name. And the... No, I'm good. So sorry about that. Keep it in so they know I'm real. Don't edit it out. I want this to feel right. So the daughter hears a scream. She hears gunshots. She goes to the house. It's surrounded by police. Both Jake and Dora have been murdered. They both have been shot in the head. The kitchen door is discovered. That's been kicked in. Shells are found, but overall, there's no evidence. And the case goes totally cold. So there's a few leads. They do investigate some leads. They all have alibis. It all checks out. And 2 years later, the family is looking in a magazine because it's the past. Mm-hmm. Those still existed.
Listen, I get Food Network magazine for the recipes. It's basically a cookbook they send to you.
Mm-hmm. Bon Appetit magazine as well.
Mm-hmm. So the photos.
Good. I'm just saying.
Yummy.
Yes.
So... 2 years later, they're reading a magazine and they see an article on Noreen. So they decide to contact her. So the case has been cold. So in November 1988, she's brought onto the case after being sent some of their objects because she has to like touch them. And she describes the victim being on the phone, talking to a female, and the crashing of the intruder coming in the home. And she even calls out what Doris said before her death. And she describes where they were shot and that they recognized the killer. So that's pretty intense.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm.
So the lieutenant on the case confirms that she's accurate about the crime scene and the victims. And now at this part, I'm like, but also you have to watch this on Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
Yes.
This is going to be what I have to go
They back. Put High her art. Under hypnosis, which is something she never brings up. Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
But here's the thing, because normally I'm like, I would be a little, so I'm a tarot and palm reader.
Yeah.
And I obviously like believe in what I do,
mm-hmm.
but I do have a strong degree of skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people going out spending $40K on crystals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want clients seeing me weekly.
Yeah.
Unneeded.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like psychic medium on Unsolved Mysteries under hypnosis. I was sus, as the kids would say. I was like, mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I feel like hypnosis kind of lands in the same area of like recovered memory shit for me.
It's
like
very, it's kinda, Michelle remembers. Like,
yeah.
I could be manifesting anything in my head.
Right.
So I'm like, I don't know about this. But under hypnosis, she describes features of the killer and that he had done work for the couple. And she asks for a first name, like the hypnotist, and she gets the letter S. But she's able to confirm different details. So then the police, the lieutenant places down 10 photographs in front of her, all turned upside down, and she touches the back of three. They flip them over. It's three people, one who has no relation to the case, really. One is the grandson, and the other is a friend of the grandson with a criminal record whose name is Robert Skinner.
Okay.
So
yes.
What they do is they go back, they recheck with those people. Their alibis do not hold up, and all three of them had planned a robbery murder, and they're identified, and they're all sent to jail.
Okay. I have so many questions.
Okay, shoot, what do you got?
Why did they not check? If they have these people in a suspect list, you know, obviously they gave her range. Did they not check the alibis before?
They did check
then?
The alibis. They didn't hold up 2 years later.
Okay.
You know how in a lot of crime cases, the worst thing you can do is if you're lying, and you either have to repeat that immediately or distantly in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't hold up.
Right.
Because I don't remember what I said to the police 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably something completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had also been cold for 2 years. So I would imagine that the individuals involved were like, we got away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And they had continued to like live in the town and like more or less act normally.
Yeah.
But some elements I find of the case are really interesting is they talk about there's some elements that she could not possibly have known, which in itself, I think, you know, I want more details mm-hmm. on that, but that is really compelling.
Yeah.
And the fact that she puts down all the photographs and she doesn't look at them mm-hmm. and she just touches the back, I also found very interesting. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that this police department was willing to go on television and be like, no, this is it. Which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most surprising part, I think, of the whole thing.
Right.
Because that police are like, first of all, we need help. Second of all, from a woman who is a psychic.
Who lives in Florida.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
But so I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
But hold on to your hats,
guys. God. Okay.
So in this Unsolved Mysteries, in the second part of the episode, the LAPD brings her in to work on a current case.
Okay.
And they film it. So I'd never seen this before. And I found this really interesting because it's easy to go back and be like, well, this is kind of what we remember and blah, blah, blah. And maybe some parts are just lied about. But like, this is on television. It could be edited, but it's like, this is an active case. We're seeking her. We're on TV. Like, we're putting ourselves out there.
Yeah.
So what they do is she provides details that had not been released to the public.
Okay.
And the police department confirms that, which is compelling.
Which to me is the more impressive thing than when somebody shows up after 2 year cold case and saying a bunch of stuff that was already released,
maybe not.
Yeah.
People could have talked about, but like,
so
current case, she could still find that out via some means, but that's pretty, I do find that like interesting.
Yeah.
So she also describes markings that match tattoos of local gangs that were being investigated at the time. Once, so for me, compelling.
Okay.
Maybe not. And then she continued to provide details that the LAPD confirmed not only is true and other elements of the case that had not been released publicly at all. So the case is active during the episode and she's working with a police artist and they create a front facing sketch of who they think the murderer is in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And an employee had seen someone getting away and they had a profile sketch and they match. But obviously a profile compared to a front facing are like those distinctive elements.
Right.
You can tell like hair color. You could guess like gender probably.
Yeah.
But so that's still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And the case is open and the end. But if you've ever watched Unsolved Mysteries in the future, which is now, the best part is when there's an update.
Yes.
And because you don't know what's going to happen. And you're also watching. You're like, okay, this was 20 years ago. Like, Is there enough?
Hopefully it's solved by now.
Yeah, like, is it solved?
We all know how the 80s worked. So.
Right. So this one was solved, and they had a picture of the person who was the murderer, and it matched the sketch.
Interesting.
Which, once again, I mean, you could argue, well, you know, these might be general features, but what I would say is if you're listening, watch the episode. I mean, I felt like it was a pretty solid match.
Yeah.
Wow. So what do you guys think of it? What do you make of Noreen so far?
I mean, that's a lot of cases.
I will forever be like, yeah, I don't know. I think there is some compelling stuff, right? Like,
right?
Anytime that you're able to tell the police or whoever details that are not necessarily public, that is pretty compelling because you know, there's a lot of these like hot cold reading techniques where you kind of gather information and bring it in, and then it's like, I forgot about that. Ooh, nobody knows. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know.
And I do want to talk about some of the skepticism with this too. Mm-hmm. So Noreen's great. You can look her up online. If you YouTube her, she was on every conceivable media outlet in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Like there's lots of stuff. But with psychic detectives, even ones that are really well recognized, you really do need to stay skeptical. Mm-hmm. So in doing all that research, I tried to truncate it down as best as I could. But some things to keep in mind are inaccurate information. So people go on a show and they just say something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe someone says a whole bunch of information and maybe one or two pieces are really compelling and amazing. But there's all this stuff that's just fake.
Yeah.
Then also vague. And you do see this sometimes on TV, but especially when people go back and recount, there's a sense of, well, they're near water.
Yes.
Well, if this murder happened in California, it's a coastal state.
Right.
They're probably by water.
Right.
I mean, there's water everywhere under the ground.
Yeah. I mean, well, right now we're by water bottles.
Yeah.
So that'd be a hit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then also doing research is the big one. Is this something that people said was never released publicly, but a reporter mentioned it in one of the early articles?
Right.
Is this something where they went into town and just like asked around and snooped? Now Noreen was based in different states during a lot of this, and it was the 80s and 90s, but like it's still conceivable that you can you could still call a records office. The other thing too, and I don't think this is brought up enough, is just educated guesswork. So when you're a police officer, you can't be like, well, it was definitely the spouse. But like a psychic could say that.
And
that's probably pretty accurate.
Right
That's so a general rule of thumb now.
Like just like it's this. And then the other two things are confirmation bias. So people, they get all this information and then they're like, oh, well, yeah, that match, because you want to feel successful. And the last one is luck. 400 cases. Maybe she just got really lucky. But there's two things I want to read off of Wikipedia that I think are going to really kind of speak to your spirit, Vicky.
Okay.
and I'm just saying they are directly off Wikipedia because I thought they were really well written and they were well sourced.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to try to rehash something as my own. And I'm just going to tell you it's from Wikipedia.
That's fair. Totally fair.
So it's from the Psychic Detective page. And the first one says, following the disappearance of Elizabeth Smart on the 5th of June, 2002, the police received as many as 9,000 tips from psychics and others crediting visions and dreams as their source. Responding to these tips took many police hours, according to Salt Lake City Police Chief Lieutenant Chris Burbank. Yet, Elizabeth Smart's father, Ed Smart, concluded that the family didn't get any valuable information from psychics. Smart was located by observant witnesses who recognized her abductor from a police photograph. No psychic was ever credited with finding Elizabeth Smart. What do you think of that?
Well,
I think that's like the concerning part. I think you're right. If someone reaches out to someone for a service, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But 9,000 tips.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a lot of wasted resources, a lot of wasted time.
Yes.
Because they are going to explore all of that, right? Like when you're getting tips in.
We hope.
They said they did. It doesn't happen. We'll hope. Yeah. But like realistically, when you're getting that amount of tips in, you do want to, if you can, explore everything, that comes in. And it does cause this backlog that could potentially delay things in any case.
Well, and also I think that a lot of times, you could always argue like, well, is this person actually psychic or are they trying to give the information this way? And like, I think that there's ways you could say like, this could be a really legitimate tip, even if we don't believe in psychic abilities, like we should still listen and investigate. So, and then the other one that I think is for me, always the classic example of Yeah. Many prominent police cases, often involving missing persons, this is the quote, have received attention from alleged psychics. In November 2004, purported psychic Sylvia Brown told the mother of kidnapped victim Amanda Berry, who had disappeared 19 months earlier, "She's not alive, honey." Brown Brown also claimed to have had a vision of Barry's jacket in the garbage with DNA on it. Barry's mother died 2 years later, believing her daughter had been killed. And they specifically cite that public appearance. Barry was found alive in May 2013, having been a victim of kidnap.
Yep.
And I think that for me is the really like...
I fucking hate Sylvia Brown.
Like,
she is
a questionable figure, right?
Yeah, she's one of those that really abuses the shit out of...
Well, she's dead now.
Claiming to be a psychic medium. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to... Is she the one who has a son that also is a medium?
Yes, I want to say her son also...
Like, kind of took over for mom in, like, the psychic medium.
It's inherited Vicky. Obviously.
It's listen, like sciatica.
Yeah.
Inherited.
This is the reason that I will not fully subscribe to any of this. Because it can be so... That's really fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you can be... either comforting, where it's like they're in a better place, there's hope, there might still be out there. But if you're just like, nah, they're straight up dead. So did she stop looking? Did they stop the investigation?
And also in a public setting.
Yes.
To be like told like your child is dead in a public media setting where I think the dynamic of had that been in private compared to had that been in public, I think a lot of my feelings about that would still be the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But it's very different, especially for that person. Because there would be a sense that this person's now manipulating this for their personal gain.
Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm.
Where if it's in private for free or for a nominal fee, I still may not agree with that. But it's not quite at the same level for me.
Yeah.
I think also, too, that would change the course of investigation, which might also miss things. So, like, now you're thinking about... If the police were really going to heavily investigate that avenue, like, we're looking for someone who's deceased, right? So then you wouldn't actively be thinking about eyewitness accounts of this person.
Right.
Because we're looking for her
death. I'm looking for a corpse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is different than a living person. And I think even just something you brought up, which I think is so smart, is just a sense of, it's like, did I show up to the party or was I invited?
Yeah. Yeah.
So... Because I do believe, like, if I have a family member and I'm a victim to a tragic situation, and we're 2 years into the case and it's cold, and I'm like, I really want to do this. I really want us to try. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing.
Yeah.
Like, when I think back to the Noreen Rainier, like, 2 years later, the family's like, we really want to do this. We don't have any ideas. They go and they personally contact that person.
Yeah.
When you're 9,000 people calling Salt Lake City,
right,
and we're in the midst of, you know, where time is so, like, every minute is so precious, that's where I start to really have an issue.
Yeah. I think, and that's an interesting thing, too, because, like, I think you should try everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, especially your 2 years, some cases, 3, 4, 5, 6, 20 years down the line, I understand a person, like, wanting to explore every avenue.
Yeah.
That's totally cool. Like, totally fine. But I also think you almost have to be a little more careful about that, because by that point, you're in a state where it's like any little scrap of anything you're going to hold on to. And it makes it easier. And I think just in general for people who go see, like, psychics or mediums or anything regularly, it's easier to overlook all of the stuff that is not a hit.
Oh, yeah,
in lieu of the stuff that may sound correct or may slight, you know what I mean? Like, it's easier to overlook a lot of the stuff that's like, okay, well, this is not really
It's even like
anything.
When you think back to like a relationship from your past, it's easy to remember all the really great times or kind of keeping things in a morbid place. Like when you're at someone's funeral, you're like, oh my goodness, I remember all those great Christmases we spent together. But you don't necessarily remember all the negative things.
Right.
So, like,
right.
When I do readings, a lot of times people will take notes. I'll even, like, offer that as a service where I will type notes and send it to you afterwards.
And
it lets me work on my writing skills.
Yeah, right.
But I think, for me, anything within the kind of the mystical New Age area, I think it's a great compliment, but it should never be a substitution. Mm-hmm. I am not a lawyer. I am not a doctor. I'm not an accountant. There are many things I am not.
Yeah.
But I can be here to help you in a way that can be enjoyable and entertaining and supportive and spiritually very rewarding. But that is not a substitute for other things.
Yeah.
I do not think a psychic detective is a substitute for police work.
Right.
But if you're 2 years in and that's where you're at and that's what you need as a family to kind of... Because the other thing too is maybe for them is like, I just need to feel like I've tried everything.
Yeah.
And after we've done that, I'm going to have some peace knowing like, you know what? We called in everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, I respect that. But I think it's so sensitive.
Yeah.
Because like the 9,000 calls... telling someone that their kidnapped daughter is dead.
Right.
These are really egregious moments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for other families, you know, it was very successful.
Yeah.
But it was also used in compliment and not as a distraction or an impediment of justice.
Yeah. Which frankly is what we run into a lot with in various investigative techniques where it's like lie detectors, for instance, right? Yeah. They are not... accurate.
Good.
They're not good.
Yeah.
But they are a useful tool in an arsenal of an investigation, right? They're not necessarily the evidence, but like they may be able to help you point in the right direction, you know? I also want to say, I think that's why I appreciate the way that you operate is because you're much more like realistic. Like you're much more practical about what you do and what you don't do and what you offer and what you don't offer. And
when I sit down to do readings with people, I will be very clear with them.
Yeah.
Like they will, they might ask, like if someone was to ask me like a medical question, I'd say,
go to a doctor.
Well, and normally like if I'm in person, like I'll try to like lighten the mood a little bit. So I'll say, you know, I have a deal with my doctor that they don't read tarot and I don't provide medical advice. So I try to really honor that.
Yeah.
And I try to line and say, you know, there can be a spiritual aspect to wellness, but it's not medical.
Right.
And if you want, we could pull like a single card for something that kind of goes into an overall support structure, but it's not medical.
Yeah.
And for some people, that's what they want. You know, sometimes you see that you pull a card like Six of Pentacles and it's like, you know what? Really work on accepting help from people. There are a lot of people around you who really want to help, and it's okay to accept their help. They're here to love you.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with something like that.
Right.
But I'm not going to be like, let's talk about the second opinion you got.
Yeah. Like, right.
That's not for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's interesting. And I also think with family, something that I hadn't thought about till I started doing the research is how comforting it can be for them. And for some families, it's kind of that element that helps bring closure or insight or whatever. Or for some people, can bring media attention in a really positive way, but can also bring media attention in a really negative way.
Yeah.
So it was more complex than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had a lot of fun researching for you gals and listeners, especially our old listeners.
That was that was great. I really enjoyed that. I always am excited about any opportunity to talk about psychic mediums, spirituality, because as you know, I'm just like not totally on board all the time.
But I think you have to have open dialogue with people, right? Yeah. And I think that's what's great about shows like this is it's not about agreeing or disagreeing. It's about like, well, how do we have a conversation? Which a lot of people have kind of forgot how to do nowadays.
Oh my God, tell me about it.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think like that's the cornerstone of like that's good living, you know? Like being able to like disagree and explore and get to some of that.
Yeah. Definitely have healthier relationships with the people that I can converse with.
Right.
Just gonna put that out there. Just gonna throw that out there.
Yeah.
Gonna put that into the universe as a manifestation moment.
Yes.
Any questions before I go into my plug-a-palooza?
No. Before you do that.
Yes.
Before you do that, if maybe before you, I don't know, get your tarot card reading or call a medium, maybe check out this podcast.
Hello, this is Margot D of the Not Fade Away podcast. This is the show that talks about folks from the music world who are no longer with us. We're talking about singers, musicians, songwriters, composers. If they made a mark on the world of music, we will talk about them. Past and future episodes include Jim Morrison, Aaliyah, John Belushi, Kurt Cobain, Tupac, and Jerry Garcia. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts under the name Not Fade Away Podcast and follow us on all of our social media channels as well under Not Fade Away Podcast. And if you have any comments or suggestions for future episodes, send an email to notfadeawaypodcast@gmail.com. Hope you check us out. Thanks so much.
Okay, so that has been our show. Now, Mr. Jacob, please.
Plug away.
Plug away. Tell us where we can find you.
So if you want to follow me, the only social media I do is Instagram, and it's at Mayfield Magic. May like the month, field like a field of flowers, at Mayfield Magic. You can also go to my website, mayfieldmagic.com. I do events in the Chicagoland area. I also do travel kind of within the Midwest nationally a little bit, but I also do readings online. Ooh. So if you kind of like my vibe, you know, kind of realistic mystic.
Ooh,
like that's pretty good.
If that's
you can use that.
Is that on a trademark? Probably the whole
way.
Sorry. But if you book an online reading with me, I do have a special coupon code for Bad Taste listeners.
Ooh.
When you go to checkout,
coupons.
Go to the coupons and just type Bad Taste. All in caps, and you'll get 15% off your reading.
Nice. And we will be sure to put all of that in our notes at the bottom of the episode. Awesome. Give you links and everything. Yeah, thank you so much. Oh, that was
it was so fun.
So delightful.
Bye.
And Jacob just ran out of the room.
Scuttle, scuttle, scuttle.
He operated. There's ectoplasm everywhere.
Honestly, if we could always do a show where I literally have to do no work and just show up.
You're like, this is bad.
Choice.
Noise.
Choice. Yeah. I don't think that we have any events really coming up.
No, not currently. No.
Yeah, no. We don't really have too much going on. Mm-hmm. I think now is a good time to put in the warning that we are not going to be recording in October, which means nothing will be releasing November. So just a heads up, November, we're going to take off.
Break
and we'll be
time.
Back in December, just in time for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
The holidays.
Yeah.
Oh, see what you did there.
Only Yuletide greetings.
Yeah, right. Do you have anything to close? Do you have anything to close?
Just looking forward to seeing you in the future.
Ooh. Yeah. All right, then with that, our sound and editing is by Tiff Fullman. Our music is by Jason Zakshevsky, the Enigma. I forgot to warn you about that. This has been the Bad Taste Crime Podcast. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Goodbye.
It was as if a wave of evil washed over this town.
We are all evil in some form or another.